It's the KVMR Evening News for Friday, January 13th, 2012. Coming up after the news headlines, we'll talk with Shauna Maziar and Caleb Dardick about this weekend's Wild and Scenic Film Festival going on in Nevada City and Grass Valley. We'll also have a commentary from George Rabane. At 6:30 this evening, it's this week's edition of Left, Right, and Center, and at 7 o'clock, it's Amy Goodman with Democracy Now! For their support, we'd like to thank the Sacramento Natural Foods Co-op, presenting The Last Crop and Future of California's Agriculture, a film about family farming and sustainable agriculture that benefits one farm at a time. It's happening on Tuesday, January 31st at 6:30 p.m. For info, go to sacfoodcoop.com. The Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Coalition, the DVSAC, serving domestic violence survivors and their families in Nevada County since 1978. The DVSAC 24-hour crisis line is at area code 530-272-3467. Additional information is available at dvsac.org. The Wooden Spoon, a toy store for cooks. The Wooden Spoon is a locally owned kitchenware store located in Grass Valley's Fowler Center, serving the Gold Country since 1979 and proudly supporting free speech on community radio, KVMR. Give them a call at 530-272-8980. I'm Felton Pruitt. Here are today's news headlines. The Los Angeles Times reports that Standard & Poor's swept the debt-ridden European continent with punishing credit downgrades today, stripping France of its coveted AAA status and dropping Italy even lower. Germany retained its top-notch rating, but Portugal's debt was consigned to junk. In all, S&P, which took away the United States' AAA rating last summer, lowered the ratings of 9 countries, complicating Europe's efforts to find a way out of the debt crisis that still threatens to cause worldwide economic harm. Austria also lost its AAA status. Italy and Spain fell by 2 notches, and S&P also cut ratings on Malta, Cyprus, Slovakia, and Slovenia. The downgrades on more than half of the countries that use the euro could drive up yields on European government debt as investors demand more compensation for holding bonds deemed to be riskier. Higher borrowing costs would put more financial pressure on countries already contending with heavy debt burdens. Stocks fell today as downgrade rumors reached the trading floors of Europe and the United States, but the declines were nothing like the wrenching swings of last summer and fall when the debt crisis threw the markets into turmoil. CNN reports that a federal judge disclosed today that former presidential candidate John Edwards has a life-threatening heart condition. Edwards had sought a delay in his criminal corruption trial scheduled to begin this month. Attorneys and the federal judge met in a North Carolina courtroom this afternoon for a status hearing regarding the pending trial of Edwards, a former U.S. senator. Edwards appeared at today's hearing. His lawyers made the motion for a delay under seal, but some of its details were publicly revealed by the judge in the open hearing. The criminal trial has been delayed until at least March 26, according to the court source. Judge Catherine Eagles said she had been in contact with Edwards' cardiologist, who recommended a postponement, saying Edwards is scheduled to undergo surgery next month. Edwards is charged with 6 felony and misdemeanor counts related to donations and to payments from his failed 2008 presidential campaign. He is accused of conspiracy, issuing false statements, and violating campaign contribution laws. He denies any wrongdoing. The Washington Post reports that a federal judge denied a request today to add 4 presidential candidates to Virginia's Republican primary ballot. U.S. District Judge John Gibney Jr. indicated he thought a provision requiring candidates to only use state residents to gather signatures was unconstitutional, but none of the candidates had collected the required 10,000 regardless. State officials told him today they did not have time to print and mail absentee ballots by January 21st in order to get them out 45 days before the primary, as required by federal law. Texas Governor Rick Perry, former Senator Rick Santorum, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, and former Utah Governor John Huntsman failed to qualify for the Virginia ballot and filed a lawsuit against the State Board of Equalizations and the state GOP to challenge the qualification rules. Only former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney and Representative Ron Paul qualified. The Sacramento Bee reports that less than 24 hours after the chief administrator of California's troubled high-speed rail project resigned, Governor Jerry Brown this morning defended the $98.5 billion project and said he will push it forward. The resignation of Roloff Van Ark, the chief executive officer of the California High-Speed Rail Authority, and an announcement the same day of the planned installation of Brown advisor Dan Richard as chairman of the rail board were viewed by many as an effort by Brown to recast the project ahead of legislative hearings this year. "I'm putting my own stamp on state government slowly but surely," the Democratic governor told reporters. The legislature is highly skeptical of the project, and public opinion has turned against it, according to a recent field poll. Circle began presenting the Wild and Scenic Film Festival this afternoon in Nevada City and Grass Valley. The film festival will run through Sunday evening. We'll have a special report on the Wild and Scenic Film Festival in just a few minutes. The weather forecast for Nevada City, Grass Valley, and the foothills is calling for clear skies this evening with a low of 32. On Saturday, it should be sunny with a high near 63 and a low around 33. On Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 52. Sunday night, a slight chance of rain and snow showers after 10 p.m. The snow level of 4,400 feet will lower to 2,600 feet. Partly cloudy with a low around 24. Winds could gust as high as 23 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation Sunday evening in the foothills is 20%. On Martin Luther King Day, it should be mostly sunny with a high near 45 and a low around 24. In Sacramento this evening, patchy fog after 10 p.m., patchy frost after 10 p.m., otherwise clear with a low of 32. On Saturday, patchy fog before 10 a.m., patchy frost before 10 a.m., otherwise sunny with a high near 61 and a low around 35. On Sunday, patchy fog before 10 a.m., otherwise mostly sunny with a high near 57 and a low around 33. And on Martin Luther King Day in the Sacramento area, it should be mostly sunny with a high near 51 and a low around 30. In Truckee this evening, mostly clear with a low of 11. On Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 51 and a low around 17. On Sunday, a 10% chance of snow showers after 4 p.m. Mostly sunny, then with a high near 46, with wind gusts as high as 40 miles an hour. On Sunday night, a 30% chance of snow showers, mainly after 10 p.m., partly cloudy and windy with a low around 13. Little or no snow accumulation is expected. And on Martin Luther King Day in the Truckee area, it should be mostly sunny with a high near 30 and a low around 9. That's the KVMR Evening News Headlines. I'm Felton Pruitt. We're talking with Shauna Maziarz, the creative director for the Wild and Scenic Film Festival, along with Caleb Dardick, the executive director of Circle. And you guys got a little something going on this weekend. So first off, what's the history of how this all came together?
This is our 10th anniversary Wild and Scenic Film Festival. So 10 years ago, we started this festival, we being Circle. It really was Kathy Dotson and Janet Cohen and Sean Garvey, the then executive director, started this festival with this vision of creating a fundraiser for Circle's work. And it just has blossomed into this huge event. And you know, I think everybody who's probably listening to KVMR knows about the impact of the Wild and Scenic Film Festival on our local economy. I just was this afternoon at Walker's picking up some copies, and they said the amount of business they've done this week just from people coming to the festival that are printing their brochures that they're bringing for their tables, et cetera.
Do you have statistics about how hotel rooms are filling up more, restaurant businesses up, and
it's most of our we mostly just have the anecdotal stories from folks. For sure, hotels and restaurants say it's their best weekend of the year.
We know that the hotels are booked up in Nevada City, and that for many of the restaurants, they tell us in some of the stores that this is their best weekend in January.
So how did the pairing of the Wild and Scenic Film Festival become part of? Why don't you give them a little history about Circle first, let people know what Circle is.
Well, Circle is the South Yuba River Citizens League, and it has been around almost 30 years. It was founded in 1983 as community coming together to stop several ill-conceived proposals to dam the Yuba. And the community rallied, organized, and was successful in protecting the South Yuba River with wild and scenic status. And in the ensuing years, more and more successes in building a strong community that's dedicated to this watershed and to preserving our quality of life and to running a number of campaigns to improve water quality, to bring back wild salmon. And also, I think what's exciting about this film festival is celebrate a sense of community and culture around the river as well.
Yeah, we certainly have a wonderful community here, and this sort of showcases it, I think, in a wonderful way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell people, what do we got? It's all started. It's already rolling. So.
It's rolling. Yeah, this morning we had 1,300 kids come to the Del Oro Theater for our school program. It was amazing. A special guest, Zeb Hogan, who's an aquatic ecologist, and Marion Stoddard, who's this amazing river advocate who's in her 80s. Both of them will be here all weekend speaking with, in conjunction with their films that they have here. Zeb's doing a workshop in our activist center. Those are free and open to the public on conservation filmmaking, along with filmmaker Andy Mazur. So I'm just telling you that to give you an example of the kinds of things that are happening beyond film. We have workshops. We're closing Commercial Street for the weekend. So we'll have live theater and music all weekend long on Commercial Street. Tomorrow at noon in front of the Nevada Theater, we're having a kids salmon parade.
Now, what's that mean?
We, as Caleb said, one of our major campaigns is bringing awareness to the plight of salmon, the Chinook salmon in the Yuba River, and trying to restore habitat for Chinook. And obviously, as we know, all that change needs to start with kids. And so the idea is just to celebrate salmon. We're going to have kids coming with different cutouts of different aspects or different stages of the salmon life cycle. And then we'll parade in our life cycle stages. So you'll have eggs at the front and adult spawners at the back. And we're just going to parade through town, and we'll have some salmon facts available for spectators and have fun.
That starts at what, noon tomorrow?
Noon in front of the Nevada Theater after the kids program. So we have kids films in the Nevada Theater from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m.
That's great. Well, you want to talk a little bit about some of the films that you're excited about that are here?
Absolutely. We have a incredible short called Dark Side of the Lens by an Irish photographer. He's a surf photographer. It's sort of this poetic 6-minute short. His name is Mickey Smith, and it's basically him just talking about what it's like to live his life in the water. And this gorgeous cinematography. He did an original soundtrack. It's, you know, it sort of epitomizes what you hope film will do, where it makes you think in a way you haven't thought and kind of turns you on. We have one of my favorite films is actually a feature-length film that has been kind of out in the world for a bit, but I want to mention it because I think it's such a great film. It's called Project Nim by the director James Marsh, who also directed Man on a Wire, which some folks may be familiar with. And it's about Nim Chimpsky, who was the chimpanzee who was raised in there was an experiment that was done in the 70s where they raised this chimp in a family's home and did language experiments with the chimp. And so it's sort of this film about the nuance of the human relationship with other species and kind of what we expect from other species. You know, once again, does what film should do. It kind of grapples with the issues of our time, you know, and what it means to be human on this planet.
Yeah. There's no Terminator movie showing this weekend then?
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
You have a favorite one that might be coming up? Or
I'm pretty excited about one of the films tonight at the Nevada Theater as part of the Indigenous Perspectives series. The film We Still Live Here is very powerful, and I think people will enjoy seeing this film.
Yeah. I guess one of the questions I should ask you is, can people go online and get the schedule? Now, where do they go for that?
Yeah, the schedule is online. Folks can also come to our headquarters and pick up a paper schedule for the people that still like to be able to flip through the book.
Which is what I just did. I just walked down there a little while ago.
Yeah.
Tell people where that is.
Yeah, our headquarters is at 210 Broad Street. It's in the Alpha Building, same place as last year. And
it's the old furniture building when you're coming into town.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Was Broad Street Furnishings. Right, right. And I will just make a quick plug, actually, while we're talking about headquarters, to say I think folks who came last year will be astounded when they walk in the door, because it is just gorgeous in there. We partnered with Nevada County Arts on putting this year's art shows together, and the amount of art in there, the amount of art in our store, people can come and buy gorgeous prints by local artists, note cards. We have these amazing Wild and Scenic mugs made by a local ceramicist.
I was looking at the mugs. I almost got one, but I bought the circle calendar. So.
Yeah, it looks like a museum. They've done a fantastic job. The website for people who want to go online, wildandscenicfilmfestival.org.
Very good. And that's got all the information, times for all the films, where they are. And right.
Exactly. And actually, if I could just also say, people will notice on our website there's a little link for a thing called Festival Genius. We're doing that for the first time this year. It's a place where people can go online and make their own schedule. So if they see a film they like, they can click on that and add it to their schedule. And Festival Genius will then schedule their weekend for them. And it has an iPhone app as well. So people that are all high-tech and have their iPhones can just download that iPhone app at Festival Genius at the App Store, and then can bring that, and it'll tell them where they're going next and how to get there.
What do you have to recommend people as far as parking and shuttles and things?
We do. The Root Center has opened up the Root Center for parking this weekend. We do not have a shuttle, but I think many folks know the county built a walkway from the parking lot that goes to the North Bloomfield crosswalk where there's a light, and people can just cross there, and then it's just a few blocks to downtown.
Yeah, about a 10-minute nice stroll, and it's going to be a beautiful day.
It's hot.
Yes. Yeah, it's warm in the studio where we are right now. Yeah. And now tomorrow evening, KVMR is bringing Amy Goodman to the Vets Hall in Grass Valley, and we are partnering with you guys. Why don't you talk a little bit about Amy's coming?
Yeah, we're pretty excited about this. We're excited, first of all, to partner with KVMR and have Amy Goodman come. We have actually quite a few media folks, you know, who are working other aspects of media besides film here this year, which we're really happy about. We have, in addition, just really quick to say, in addition to Amy Goodman coming, we have Steve Katz coming, who's the publisher of Mother Jones magazine. We have Jason Houston coming, who's the photo editor for Orion magazine. So we'll have some, I think, really nice presence from people in the media world, which obviously film is a you know, form of media and a way of communicating ideas and stories. And as we know, Amy Goodman is a master at that, at getting to the heart of the matter. And so she'll be talking probably for about an hour, and then we're going to be showing an incredible film, very I hesitate to say this, but it's probably somewhat controversial film called Schooling the World by an LA-based director named Carol Black. And Carol will be here in attendance, and we'll be speaking after the film and doing a Q&A with audience members. So it's going to be a really, I think, very stimulating and enlightening evening over there, and that's at the Grass Valley Vets Hall.
Right. Now, most of this is happening here in Nevada City. What else? Is there anything else going on in Grass Valley specific? Or?
Yeah, we have an art show at the Center for the Arts. Okay. It's all nature photography. It's a gorgeous show. There's 9 artists exhibiting there, and they're going to be doing a reception tomorrow evening from 4:30 to 6:30. In addition to, we'll be having receptions and a wine stroll in collaboration with the Nevada City Chamber of Commerce at that same time, 4:30 to 6:30. Both in Nevada City and Grass Valley.
So I've brought us up through Saturday night, I guess. Let's roll into Sunday now. What's happening on Sunday?
Films all day long, and we have music down on Commercial Street. We have some live theater on Commercial Street. We have workshops happening all day in the Activist Center, which is City Hall. Those are all free and open to the public. We have, for the first time ever, we're partnering with Nevada Theater Film Series to show some of our award-winning films at the Nevada Theater at 7 o'clock, and then that will be followed by an after-party, which we've have never done before either, at the National Hotel with the Belfry Brothers, kind of a local favorite band from the Ridge. Bluegrass, kind of old-timey music, and we're going to hopefully just dance and celebrate a really successful weekend. And the other thing I want to just mention about Sunday is that the majority of the films on Sunday are repeats. This is something we started doing about 2 years ago because people were telling us how kind of frantic they felt at the festival trying to get to the one screening of the film they really wanted to see. So the vast majority of the films will show twice over the course of the weekend. So people can not fret. If they look in their schedule online or on the program, it'll tell them both screenings of the film.
So what venues are actually showing the films? Obviously the Nevada Theater, and then what else?
Nevada Theater, we have 2 different theaters at the Miners Foundry, so the Stone Hall and Osborne Woods, which used to be called the Great Hall. Oddfellows, Masons, Vets, and Nevada City Elementary, which is now Yuba River Charter School.
Okay. And I guess so now people are going, well, we have this incredible event. Hopefully you're going to raise a lot of money. You have some active campaigns, which then this will support.
Yeah, we're very excited to have this forum, to be bringing 4,500 people to Nevada City, not only to be inspired and enjoy this amazing film festival, but to also support the work that Circle does year-round. Right now, priority issue for Circle is to support and work with the community to save our 2 state parks, the South Yuba River and Malakoff Diggins State Parks, from being closed by the state due to budget cuts. Both of them are now on the list to be closed July 1st, and we're determined to stop that from happening. About a month ago, Circle co-organized a town hall meeting, and over 400 people came. And we issued a challenge that evening that we wanted to collect 5,000 letters and petition signatures in the next 30 days. And we thought perhaps that we were overreaching with that goal but we knew that we needed a sizable number to get the attention of the government. And within 2 weeks, we hit that number. And I'm pleased to say that the last count I got about 20 minutes ago is that we were upwards of 7,600 signatures. And it just shows the level of dedication and determination of our volunteers to go out and collect those signatures and write those letters, but also of this community to understand how important this cause is. We gave a little incentive to the community to collect signatures, said that there'll be prizes to a pass to the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. And the Grass Valley Charter School students, parents, teachers worked together as a team. They came in with over 1,100 signatures, winning because they're kids. We gave them passes to the film fest for the kids' shows. But we're just so impressed by the energy of the young people and their families. And we're in conversations with the county and the state, and I think this pressure is getting us an audience. And we're going to keep collecting signatures throughout the weekend, and we think it's going to make a big difference. And we think we're running a good campaign, and we appreciate the community support. The other thing I wanted to point out is that we're running another letter-writing campaign to the Forest Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service, because there are about to be some major sort of milestones in the relicensing process of dams on the Yuba River. And we believe that the message in these two postcards is very important for the Forest Service and for NIMS to hear. And so we'll also be encouraging film goers to take a break from the film watching and to fill out these petitions, fill out these cards, and help us send a strong message both to Sacramento and to Washington about a free-flowing Yuba River.
Can I add something to that?
Go right ahead.
So we have actually quite a bit of programming also in association with these two campaigns that Caleb just talked about. With state parks, we're going to be showing a couple of films about state parks in California. One's called California Forever, and one's called The First 70. We also are showing a film called The Mono Lake Story, and many folks may know that Mono Lake State Park was just removed from the closure list, and so the Mono Lake Committee will be here in person to talk about that.
How they were successful.
And their message is get involved, and, you know, we don't have to tell that to folks in Nevada County, but get involved. It makes a difference.
We'll also be having a panel discussion from 3 to 4 p.m. at the Activist Center on Saturday. Caleb will be moderating that. Elizabeth Goldstein, who's the executive director of the California State Park Foundation, will be there. Cal Hart, the chair of the State Park Commission, will be there. And David Vassar, one of the filmmakers of California Forever, will be on that panel. We will also have the kids from Grass Valley Charter School at the kids' film session Saturday morning, and they'll be getting recognized for their incredible work. They made a trip down to Sacramento to talk with the powers that be, and so they'll be talking about that experience. And then in terms of dams and salmon, we have so many films talking about rivers, river health, incredible river activists that will be here over the weekend, International Rivers, Circle, American Rivers. We're doing a dam removal celebration from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the Haven, which is free and open to the public. We'll have some free beer from Sierra Nevada. We're going to have salmon, smoked salmon to eat, and we'll be having a one-act slapstick comedy about salmon and dams.
All right. We've got a wonderful weekend here, folks. Give them the website one more time so they can find out more.
It's wildandscenicfilmfestival.org.
All right. Shauna and Caleb, thank you very much. Have a successful weekend.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate your support.
And now, KVMR presents a commentary from George Rabain.
Most people know that governments fund themselves by taxing income, profits, consumption, and assets. The first three we have become used to, at least to a degree where we now debate how much higher or lower such taxes should be. It's the tax on assets that causes pupils to dilate and blood pressures to rise, well, at least on those who have assets. All countries have a natural division between their makers and takers, the latter being reliable backers of any and all taxes on the makers, because that's where the money is. But asset taxes are somehow different. Maybe one reason is that many takers also own assets. Almost everyone instinctively knows that an assets tax, also known as a wealth tax, allows the state to take what you have already worked for, have already paid taxes on, and put aside to support your way of life. Your assets, like your house, land, car, collectibles, business, and bank account, are part of the extended you, part of the established perpetuity that you want your kids to have. It is for that reason that you belong to a culture, a society, and a sovereign nation state, because they claim to provide an environment for guaranteeing your security, property, and liberty. And it is for that reason that you will man the ramparts and put your life on the line when your country is in danger. With a discussion of a new assets tax, all things become possible. In a recent issue of the Wall Street Journal, Stanford economics professor Ronald McKinnon argues for an add-on assets tax for the purpose of mollifying the street occupiers. He even sprinkles sugar on his proposal by claiming to make the, quote, conservative case, unquote, for such a tax. The example he presents is that the government would annually confiscate 3% of your accumulated wealth in excess of $3 million, and that means everything you own, including the, quote, imputed rental value of owner-occupied homes, unquote. The impact of asset taxes is already well known to those who own their homes and other real property. In California, people, especially the poor and retired, were beginning to lose their homes to ever-rising property taxes, a recognized and feared assets tax. Their answer to that was Prop 13, which dramatically limited government's ability to violate what many hold to be the takings clause in the Fifth Amendment to our Constitution. This clause enters the argument because asset taxes frequently require the disposal of the asset, a home, farm, or business, often at a loss to raise money to pay the tax. With the initiation of an assets tax, the government now comes back for a double dip. And that's not even true. The government actually comes back for a double, triple, and keeps coming back for a never-ending series of dips until it whittles down what's yours to some arbitrarily small level for you to have left that it considers is socially just. But there's more. Once assets begin to be taxed, there is nothing to prevent our rapacious rulers from upping the tax rate on assets, lowering the deductible threshold, and increasing the assets classes that can be taxed. Why? Because this has happened to every other type of tax the government has levied on us. And we have to remember the cry of the takers and their elites that today echoes across the land. We don't have a spending problem. We have a revenue problem. When a government starts taxing assets which have already been taxed, it taxes them in a manner that requires either their disposal or taking on more risk in the attempt to keep them. Doing so starts a nation on the path to destroy the very economy that generates a society's ability to produce wealth, fund its government, and secure its people's future. It does that because asset taxes put up a barrier to every measured means for creating wealth. The socialist never sees any of this because his usual stasis analysis is based on the assumption that the newly taxed and or regulated will never respond to preserve themselves. In the socialist's eyes, those taxed and regulated will simply remain compliant and continue their previous labors, no matter the new burdens that government has in store for them. And for some reason, those same social engineers are forever surprised when things don't work as planned. The expected revenues never materialize, and the call goes out for more of the same as the takers continue to cheer from the bleachers. My name is Rebane, and I also expand on these and other themes in my Union columns and on georgerebane.com, where this transcript appears. These opinions are not necessarily shared by KVMR. Thank you for listening.
Well, that's going to do it for our newscast for this evening. The KVMR Evening News is produced by the staff and volunteers of KVMR Radio. We'd like to thank George Rebane for his help in preparing this evening's newscast. Coming up next is this week's edition of Left, Right, and Center, and at 7 o'clock, Amy Goodman with Democracy Now! Don't miss Amy Goodman tomorrow night at the Vets Hall in Grass Valley. I'm Felton Pruitt. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the film festival.